We're talking about Siddhaputta. Before we begin, I lived in the San Diego temple when he was working on all the books that Krishna Kripa was talking about. Krishna Kripa was there. And so I can speak a little bit just from my experience of what it was like to be there in San Diego. When was that? Mid-80s? When did he come there? So there was a college there called the University of San Diego, and it specialized in medicine, so most of the students were studying biology. And at that time, the Origins magazine had come out, and Siddhaputta was there giving classes explaining the need for the Origins magazine, explaining more of the background information that went into the articles in the Origin magazine. So we were preaching a lot about the falsities of evolution, and it was just kind of pervading the whole temple, wasn't it? From what I remember, at least. So it pervaded all of us who were preaching, and I was going to that college at least once or twice a week doing programs. So we bring up these topics. The only problem was that I was never interested in science personally. So, but I had a lot of the arguments, but occasionally they had arguments that I didn't understand, you know, the latest nuance on a theory. So it was so fun when that would happen. And a lot of these students were a little proud because they thought we're just Hare Krishna losers, basically, you know, college dropouts. And how can we talk to them scientifically? So they would throw their ideas at us. We'd say, why don't you talk to him? And then we would sit there and watch. And they would, you know, like any bona fide 19-year-old who knows everything, would explain how they know everything. And after about 2 minutes of hearing him, they realized who they were talking to. And they got a little red, and they didn't talk, they just listened. So it was like the way we got back at them. It was very gratifying. So he was like our father, you know. If we got into trouble, we'd say, why don't you talk to him? He can explain it better than I can. And then we just watch. It was so much fun to watch. Another thing that I liked so much about being in San Diego is that he gave class every week. I don't think there's anyone in ISKCON, maybe Rasa Raj, a few other scientists, but I never heard anyone give Bhagavatam class like he gave. And he would always analyze the Bhagavatam from his scientific perspective, and he would help us to understand things that we normally wouldn't understand, or to see it from perspectives that we didn't have the capacity to see from. And I learned so much from him about what Prabhupada taught, and I always felt that it was such an honor to hear from him, because he could give insight to the text and the purports in a way that no other devotee I know could. I mean, there may be devotees who could, but none that I had heard that depth. You agree? So it was very special there. Parashakti, you remember? It was special, right? Like what we knew in the San Diego devotees, what we knew was like special for us. We had insights that your average devotee didn't have, because we were getting to hear him every week. And Judah Karma Prabhu was there, and they were working on the Forbidden Archaeology book at that time. And all of, during this entire period, Siddhaputta was doing tremendous research and producing videos. So naturally, you know, conversations during prasadam would discuss what he's doing and the latest theories and his points of view. And so we were surrounded by this. So we were actually quite knowledgeable about what was going on in the scientific world. And as Krishna Kripa was saying, we became quite knowledgeable about the cheating that was going on, because we started hearing stories about professors who found fossils that they shouldn't have found. And at least when they found them, they should have thrown them away, because it cost them their job, because those fossils didn't support evolutionary theory. and hearing story after story about this. And all of us ex-hippies like to hear those stories because we don't like what's going on in the culture. So anyway, I always appreciated his association. I've heard many comments from very intelligent Indian young boys, highly placed in Indian colleges, of how amazed they were by the knowledge that he had, which they gained from reading his books. And I believe, I'm confident, that for hundreds if not thousands of years, those books will influence the world and influence these brainy type scientific people who need that to become Krishna conscious. They need that kind of thing, otherwise they may not be convinced of the value of what's in the Vedas. So he's still contributing to making people Krishna conscious, in my opinion. Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada ki jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai. Skand Bibhiti Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Nam Acharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai. Hamsa Gaho Sri Krishna Chaitana Purumrita Ananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Suvasthiri Gaur Bhakti Vrinda ki jai. Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopina Shama Kundra Kundra Giri Govardhana ki jai. Sri Vrindavan Dham ki jai, Sri Mayapur Navati Dham ki jai, Bhakti Revi ki jai, Tosi Revi ki jai, Shamavera Bhakta Vrindi ki jai, Dhai Gopay Manandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Ajnana Tinirandasya Jnanam Jana Shalakaya Chakshurun Ninitam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Panchakalpa turyubhyascha kripa sindhubhya eva cha pratithanam pavanevyo vaishnavevyo namo namaha. Sri Krishna Chaitana Prabhu Nithananda Shyadvaita Gadadhar Shivasri Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama. So it's nice to see all of you. nice to be here for a few days. So I do something, the last few years I've been doing something unconventional. I've been beginning my lectures with questions. Usually end your lectures with questions. There's never enough time for questions. So I begin my lectures asking, does anyone have any questions? Of course, if you don't have any questions, I can speak something. But I have found that by asking for questions, then I understand what's relevant to people. And of course, I've caught you off guard, so maybe you don't have any questions, maybe you do. And so I'll wait a minute and see if there's something you're dying to ask. Well, I always threaten people, if you don't ask me a question, I'll ask you a question. She has a question. Yes? Why is he born on Ashtami? He was born at the most auspicious time. All the planets were perfectly aligned. It was the most auspicious time ever. So. That's why he came, at midnight on Ashtami. It said the planets were aligned in such a way that everybody felt peaceful and blissful and everything was wonderful. Anyway, Krishna chooses when to come, unlike us. What's the difference between us and God? He chooses what he wants to do and we don't, right? If you were God, would you have... If you were God, would your life be the way it is now? Or would you change a few things? But if you were God, you could. And so if you're God, would you change a few things? Yeah. I mean, you could change anything. You could change your body. You could change your house. You could change your bank account. You could change your health. You could change your friends. Must be a few things you'd want to change, right? So that's God. He does things because he wants to, not because he has to. I ask people a question. I say, if you were God, what would you do? Would you do what you're doing now? You could do anything, control anything. First thing is you'd quit your job, right, if you were God? And build a mansion somewhere at the beach. And create friends that love you and you know, all kinds of things, right? So that's the difference between us and God. Someone else, you had a question, yeah.
We sometimes may become, we might get distaste for them, like say studies or maybe a worldly subject or something. So how does a devotee take this and does he try to, reignite the zeal for that somehow, or how is it done?
You're saying so we have to do things to maintain our material life that we don't like? So is the devotee enthusiastic about those things? But you said material activities, right? Like what? Studying when you're going to school? Studying a subject you don't like, how do you become enthusiastic? Well, first thing is, if you're actually a devotee, you don't do anything material. So everything you do, you connect to Krishna. Once you're connected to Krishna, you can be enthusiastic. If you see it as separate from Krishna, then you are seeing yourself separate from Krishna in some way, and that activity separate, and then, yeah, how would you be enthusiastic? Boring. So, everything is connected to Krishna. We're the only ones who disconnect it in our consciousness. So you have to connect it. I do this for Krishna so I can maintain, I get a job, maintain my family, we'll worship Krishna, we'll give money to Krishna like that. So you have to see it in connection to Krishna. Then you can be enthusiastic. As long as you can connect it. If you do something you can't connect, then you're not going to be enthusiastic about it. Yes.
in the Rakshastras, in the Shastras, it talks about Rakshastras. I think that's what they're pronounced. And they say they're man-eaters. Do they actually eat men?
Yeah, watch out.
But I hear that they're like, Prabhupada said that they're the leaders of society. So are they saying... Is that not true?
They're like Rakshasas, yeah.
Oh, they're like, okay. So they're not literally Rakshasas.
There are Rakshasas on other planets that eat men, but they're like Rakshasas. And there will be, it's predicted in Bhagavatam, people will eat their babies when there's a lack of food and when Kali Yuga is advanced. So, I was in Los Angeles, 1972, I believe, and Prabhupada gave a lecture and said, Kali Yuga will get so bad, you don't want to come back. Now, you're young, so you don't know how bad it's gotten in the last 20 years, but... You know, when I was a devotee, things were bad, but not as bad as they are now. So Prabhupada said that in 1972. He said, don't come back. So all the people in the room are like 20, 25. So come back means, what, 50, 60 years, right? So 50, 60 years from... So that was 40 years ago, so we're talking another 10 or 20 years. He's saying, don't come back. It's going to be really bad. It's already happened. So watch out. If you come back, those Rakshasas might be living in your neighborhood. I was just in Mexico, and so the word in Mexico is don't go out at night, because you'll get robbed or raped. So, you know, what's going on?
Thank you.
Yes.
You always have so many nice analyzations of the mind and how to control it. And I was wondering, sometimes I hear from devotees two different things. Sometimes devotees will say that that just chant Hare Krishna and just keep doing your service and 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 eventually your mind will be, you know, pacified. Eventually your mind will actually become a devotee and will accept things favorable for Krishna, you know, all those things. Eventually it'll become our best friends. But
what do they advise until then?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. So, and then there's some devotees that are like, no, actually you have to work on your mind. That you can't just only chant Hare Krishna and keep doing your service and let your mind drive you crazy. So, what do you suggest?
If you could chant a pure holy name, yeah, then no problem. Are you asking in general what to do with your mind or while you chant or both? Well, I can tell you a realization I have from studying the holy name and facilitating japa workshops and studying Buddhism. One thing I realized is that when you're in your heart, you're not in your mind. When you're in your mind, you're in your heart. When you're in your mind, you're not in your heart. When you're in your heart, you're not in your mind. Should I explain that? When you're feeling, that's when you're present to something, when you're feeling, experiencing. Just like, let's say you're chanting, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, and you're at a workshop and they're saying, feel the holy name, feel it. If you feel, you can feel Krishna in the holy name, just feel it. And you're sitting there, am I feeling it? I wonder if I'm feeling it. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. When am I? I don't know, maybe. What does it feel like to feel it? Hare Krishna. Then you're in your head, right? Because now you're not experiencing it. Actually, you are feeling it, but you don't know you're feeling it because you're in your head. You can't allow yourself to feel it. So feeling comes from allowing yourself to feel the holy name and also praying, because that's the feeling you give the holy name. So when you're feeling that, then your mind just shuts off, right? But when you're not feeling, your mind analyzes. Like, am I feeling is an analysis. I wonder if I'm praying properly. I mean, it's just the right way to pray. I get letters from people. I want to know exactly how long it takes to chant one. I mean, what's the perfect amount of time to chant one round? I tell him, well, you know, 6 to 8, 6 minutes to 10 minutes. No, I need to know exactly. Hare Krishna, am I doing it right? Exactly. Hare Ram, Ram, Ram. That's analysis. Right? Am I praying properly? Hare Krishna. This is how you're supposed to pray, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. I don't know if I could really pray. I'm not that sincere. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, 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 Hare. One of the other devotees are praying better than I am. Oh, that devotee looks like they're praying better than me. I hate that devotee. Hare Krishna. You know, it's like you're living in your head, right? Why can't I pray like them? And they look so sincere. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. So, at least when you're chanting, at least that's my experience, when you go into a prayer, Krishna, please help me, Krishna, please uplift me, then you're in your heart. Your head just goes, because it's not necessary, right? Your mind's necessary for analysis, right? When you appreciate something, you don't appreciate it with your head. This is really interesting, because we talk about appreciating devotees, okay? Say, Prabhu, say something you appreciate about Krishna Kripa. And you're looking at him and going, let me see here. So now you're analyzing, right? You're going in your head, well, he's got a very interesting thing around his neck. I haven't seen anybody with something around their neck. I'm not sure what it is, but it's different. Yeah. So you're looking for something to appreciate. Yeah. Is that all you can say? Got something interesting around his waist. I like the color of his. He's got a nice pink tangerine color of his dhoti. Yeah. You see, you're in your head. Appreciation takes place in your heart. Appreciation, you feel it. You don't think it. Right? So that's the difference between head and heart. Are you really appreciating Krishna Kripa? And you go, well, that's a nice color pink. Not really. I mean, are you excited about the color pink that Krishna Kripa is wearing? Do you actually feel that deep in your heart? No. But you appreciate Krishna Kripa. He's always ecstatic. Whenever I see him, I feel like dancing. And he's always dancing, and I feel blissful, and I feel encouraged in my Krishna consciousness, because he's so humble, and he's like, and he's been around forever, and he just takes a very humble position, and he's very unassuming. Like, you're feeling that, right? In your heart. That's where you feel it. I said, what's your mind doing? Your mind's not analyzing that at all, is it? You're just appreciating. So, what do you do when your mind is wild and crazy? Can you give me an example of something that your mind does that bothers you? This is embarrassing, but I need an example. All right, you can make one up.
It likes to worry.
It likes to worry about things that you can't change, right? Yeah. One devotee was telling me something interesting. And I just, by chance, this morning was listening to a talk about sexual addiction and how the mind works in sexual addiction. And there's two aspects of the mind, the addicted part of the mind and the intellectual part of the mind. Like the part of the mind that has the habit, I forget the name of it, and the part of the mind that has the addiction. So this man was saying, when the addictive part of the mind comes, I speak to it. I talk to it, like it's another person. I say, okay, now, I just want you to stop worrying. I don't like this worrying stuff. It doesn't help me. So just stop worrying. So it's like there's a conversation with another person. And other people have told me that. They deal with that side they don't like as another person. That's your conditioned side just coming up, right? Did your mother worry? All right, there we go. Solves that problem, right? I was talking to this one devotee. He said, I'm so worried about this, I'm so worried about, and I feel like this, and I feel like that. And I said, was your mother like that? And he goes, Yeah, exactly like that. So sometimes we have to understand that we're just, you know, that's just the conditioned side. But what I find for myself that, and I help, I teach this to other devotees, I find this helps. It's always better to focus on the way you want to be than the way you don't want to be. So you think, I don't want to worry. Well, what's the opposite of worry? Trust. Okay. So it's better to focus on what you want than what you don't want. There's a funny story I read the other day. The guru gives the disciple a mantra, and he says, okay, this is how you chant the mantra. It goes like this. There's one thing very important. When you chant the mantra, it's very important you don't think of monkeys. I never think of monkeys. What's the problem? What do you think he thinks of when he chants the mantra? Monkeys, because he's not supposed to think of monkeys when he chants the mantra. Hare Krishna, I'm not supposed to think of monkeys. Now I'm thinking of monkeys. What do you think of when you think, I'm not supposed to think of monkeys? Think of monkeys, because that's what you're not supposed to think of. Right? So when we think of what we don't want, what are we thinking of? What we don't want. One teacher said, mind has an interesting nature. It likes thoughts and it eats on thoughts. It chews them up. Feed them and it just keeps eating them. It likes them. So you can worry forever. Till you have a nervous breakdown. Isn't it? So we understand the mind works a certain way, but then what's very powerful is to think, what do you want? How do you want to think? How do you want to be? And you focus on that. I want to be trusting, I want to, you know, so that becomes your object of meditation, your goal. It's a very interesting thing that a lot of us think, well, you know, you can't think about some goals that are hard to achieve. Why? Who's stopping you from thinking like that? What verse is that? You can't think like that. I haven't read the verse yet, right? Okay, Dhruva Maharaj, okay, we're off to get a universe. I'm five, so what? Let's do it, right? So why not think about high things? Impossible things. That was as one teacher said, he said, you're a fool if you think about only things you can achieve. He said, think about things you can achieve. Then you'll actually have to grow. You know, why think about what you think's possible? Think about what's impossible. Okay, what's impossible? I'm going to be a pure devotee. Let's work for that. Why not? That's a great goal, isn't it? If everyone decides right now, the goal of my life is to be a pure devotee in this lifetime, you know, you have to change your lifestyle a little bit to achieve that. Yeah. That's the point. And you think, nah, I can't do that. So then what happens? If you think you can't do it, you adjust your goal. Well, maybe three lifetimes. So this life, I'll, you know, this lifetime my goal is to become a guru coolie in my next life. And when I die, you know, a week before, I'm going to decide which gurukul is the best, and I want to make sure I take birth in that city. No, right? For all of you who think like that, I have some discouraging news. Please pay attention. Whatever anarthas you die with, whatever attitudes you have, whatever challenges you have in this lifetime, you're going to have them in the next lifetime if you don't solve them. Sorry for the bad news. Everybody's thinking, hey, next body, you know, this is all washed away. We have so many second generation devotees who can attest, it's not all washed away. You come with stuff, right? Because it was the stuff that was left from the last life, right? So why not make goals which are wonderful? What do you want? Like sometimes Prabhupada would say, what do you want to do for Krishna? Well, what kind of devotee would you like to be? What would you like to achieve, you know? I went to the seminar. There are 1,000 people in the seminar, right? I'm like, wow, 1,000 people. And I thought, wouldn't that be nice? There are 1,000 people coming to a japa seminar, brand new devotees. And I had this vision, I'm sitting on stage, you know, Hare Krishna. And there's 1,000 people, never chanted japa before now. Hare Krishna, Krishna. Why can't I think like that? I mean, maybe it'll happen. Who knows? Maybe it won't. Last week, I at least did it with 40 people. That's a start. You know? And they were Hare Krishna. They were really sincere, and I was watching them. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. I was thinking, okay, this is, you know, 1/25th of the thousand, but maybe we're on our way. You know, why can't we think like that? You know? It's better than thinking like, I could never do that. I'm just like a loser, you know. How could I do that? You know, I'm not like a Rajanath Swami. I'm just a, you know, just an Alachua devotee, a fallen Alachua devotee, you know. They don't do anything like that. Yeah. Right? So why not think like that? So think what you want, not what you not don't meditate on what you don't want. And when you chant, experience, and then you don't have any trouble with your mind. We did that workshop last year, wasn't it? 2 years ago, and it was all about feeling. So feel it. Feel the mantra. Feel it. Don't think it. Prabhupada said you can feel Krishna in the holy name. So feel it. Now I did this nice workshop. I developed it last year. It was very interesting developing it. It was a workshop on conditioning. So I got this book by Suhota Swami, which is a book on Vedic psychology. And I studied other things about conditioning, which is basically subconscious programming from, you know, samskaras, impressions from other lives. And I had this realization that all these things we're challenged with are things that we programmed ourselves in other lifetimes. Because they worked for us, you know. Like envy, you know. In one lifetime, envy was very valuable. It got what I wanted. And lust got me what I wanted. You know, then you become a devotee and it's like, wait a minute, this doesn't work. So now we're complaining about our minds, but what are we complaining about? We're the ones who programmed them, right? So when you realize that you programmed them, then you realize you can reprogram them. You don't have to accept that program. Okay, so it's programmed this way, so why don't I reprogram it in a way that's going to work for me as a devotee? So I start working on that. What's a better way of thinking? Like we discussed in Gainesville, it's a really nice thing that Patanjali said. He said, if you're envious of someone, then how you adjust to the envy is become their well-wisher. Just turn it backwards. Turn it on its face, upside down. Become the well-wisher of someone you're envious of. So some devotee achieves something, and you're thinking, that devotee, I join with that devotee. They're always eating too much prasadam, and they always, you know, never mangalartik on time, and I always distributed more books than them. And now they're doing this. You know, and they're getting glorified, and I'm not getting glorified. You know, this is not right. I don't like this, right? But so Patanjali says, in that situation, it's become a well-wisher. So, Prabhu, I appreciate your service, doing so nicely. So that's reprogramming, because that's how we're supposed to think, right? I mean, it's amazing. I just was in Mexico. We did a workshop on forgiveness. 150 devotees. It was amazing. They were going up in front of the crowds doing confession. I never saw it. You know, I was a Catholic. I go, who would like to come up and express what it feels like to hold on to a grudge? And they'd come up and they'd do a whole life's confession. So what we are carrying around, wow, it's like amazing. So we need to turn this stuff around quick. We're devotees. We're not supposed to carry that around. That's not the way we're supposed to think. Right? Loving, kind, compassionate, serving. That's what we're supposed to be. So we understand the way we're supposed to be, and then becomes our goal. We start to reprogram. This is what I want. These are my goals. This is what I'm striving for. And when I'm not like that, I just accepted that, Krishna, you're just showing me what I need to work on. That's it. Now, I have to say something. I'm so, rambunctious or whatever. But I do a lot of traveling, and I see something that really bothers me. Should I tell you what it is? Bad husbands. They think because they're husbands they can do anything they want. And I tell them, what happened to the Bhagavad Gita? You know, what happened? There's this wonderful letter Prabhupada wrote, one of my godbrothers. My godbrother had a son who was 1 year old. His wife was probably 24, 25. He wrote Prabhupada a letter and said, I want to take sannyas. Prabhupada said, whoa, wait a minute. You have a one-year-old son. Do you realize that what's that going to do to your wife? Prabhupada said, you know the verse in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says a devotee doesn't cause distress to anybody? Did you read that verse? How is a devotee supposed to act? Sometimes we act in ways which are contrary to the way devotees are meant to act. And Prabhupada pointed it out. Incredible letter. It's an amazing letter. I think it's 1973, 1974 to Madhu. And then he wants to get out. He says, I can't be Krishna conscious in this relationship. Prabhupada says, nonsense. You can be Krishna conscious anywhere. You're a neophyte. You think you can't be. You think the situation makes you Krishna conscious. Just, you know, it's like Prabhupada saying, like, wait a minute, haven't you read my books? Don't you know the philosophy? Right? So, I want to tell you something that really turned me around that I've learned in Mayapur. It was just so wonderful. Bhaktivedanta Purnaswamy has a Gurukul, and he's doing something amazing in this Gurukul. I have to tell you this, it's so exciting. He's training his brahmacharis. Oh no, you know, the sannyasis might throw darts at him for this. He's training his brahmacharis to be good grihasthas. Oh, you don't do that with brahmacharis. You give brahmacharis brahmachari classes. Ah, women are bad. Don't fall into the pits, the wells. That's a good brahmachari class, right? Don't ever get married. If you do, you're condemned. Good brahmachari class, right? Satchinandan tells me a story. I heard a story. He said he gave a brahmachari class. Women this, women that, women this, women that. And he asked the man, how'd you like my class? He said, I'm more sexually agitated now than before the class started. The whole class was about women. So Bhaktivedanta Purnaswamy, he trains his brahmacharis to be grihasthas. Why? Wow, what's going to happen to all the brahmacharis? They're all going to get married. He said, no, that's not what happens. He said, two things happen. The men who want to get married become really good brahmacharis because they understand how to be good husbands, because they understand woman's nature and how to deal with it. And number two, the men who are actually brahmacharis, after they learn about woman's nature, grihastha life and like, they realize they don't want to do that. It serves both functions. Perfect, isn't it? Great idea, right? Fantastic. Then he said something else, and I have fun saying this in India to the men because I'm such a weird person, but I have fun saying what he said. So he said, you know, sometimes women, they get emotional, and the macho man says, get yourself together. Just pull it together. Just be strong. I don't want to hear this stuff. Don't give me all this emotional stuff. Just be strong, face it. He said, that's the macho man. He said, those men, they're the ones who think they're the tough guys. They're strong. He said, no, they're the weaklings. They can't control themselves. That's why they say that. Because they have no patience. They have no sympathy. Can't listen. He said, the real macho so-called men are the ones who are self-controlled, who can sit down with a wife who's upset and emotional and say, talk to me, and they just listen. He said, those are the self-disciplined men. Those are the real men. So I've been traveling around the world running into all kinds of problems with men who aren't good husbands because they think they rule the world. So I just wanted to relate to this because I think it's important for men to understand that you're devotees. What does a devotee mean? There's a story, Jagannath, this is Gaurakishore Das Babaji. Someone came to him and he said, your service is to serve your wife, hand and foot, because that will make you humble. Wow. brahmacharis, what do you think of that? Men, what do you think of that? Fun's over. Hey, I don't know if I want to get married now. I'll serve my wife. And women need kindness, affection, love, consideration. So many men don't give it. It's a bad situation out there. And we are devotees, and we're all about love and kindness and affection, aren't we? Isn't that what we teach? Isn't that what we preach? Isn't that what's in our books? Right? So why aren't we like that in our families? It's amazing. So I see this paradox. It's everywhere, and it's a challenge for us. We live a paradox. It's a cultural thing. In this country, the men are, I just tell my wife what to say. If she doesn't say it, I hit her in the face. That's it, over. No, we're not of this culture, that culture. We're Vaishnavas. It's Brahminical culture. Brahmins don't do that. Brahmins are disciplined. They're self-controlled. And they're meant to be kind, serving, loving, compassionate. So I just had to say that because it was really bothering me. And I came from a country last week where it's pretty pervasive, at least outside of ISKCON, very pervasive. And all the people I talked to, and it was just bothering me a lot. So I had to say that. So I said it. Hare Krishna. So, should we end now? We started late. Do I get a 10-minute grace period or what? I mean, you can all leave if you want, but I'll stay here if someone has a question. Because I don't get to give class here ever. So it's my big chance to tell you all how crazy the world is. All the crazy things I see out there. Anybody else have something? They want to share? You don't have to be a question, you can share. Yes.
When you are especially when your mind becomes thinking too much, or like Mataji was saying, thinking about worries, or getting, how do you then come to a state again back to a...
Here's an important thing to understand, and it's in the Bhagavatam 11th canto. I think one of the misconceptions that we have is that if your mind is thinking something that's not Krishna conscious, you have to act on it. It's a huge misconception. You don't. Oh, my mind's thinking like this, therefore I have to do it. Who said you have to do it? You did. You might say it, but you don't have to. Right? It's right there in the Bhagavatam, 11th canto. So what we're learning until we become advanced in Krishna consciousness is the mind may say so many things, but you're going somewhere. And you can go there no matter what it says. Oh, look at that, I really want that. So what? Who cares? I'm going this way. Oh, but look at that, I really want that. It doesn't matter. Sometimes you can't control the mind. These are subconscious, these are samskaras from millions of lifetimes. Prabhupada said, do you know why Ravi Shankar is so good at the sitar? He said, because he practiced for 1,000 lifetimes. How many lifetimes have we have practiced being controller, enjoyer, greedy, lusty, angry? We're really good at it. We know how to do it. It's spontaneous. It comes up. But now that you're a devotee, it doesn't mean you have to act on it. That's the power that you have. And we don't all understand that, because when it comes up, we think, I have to do it. That's a huge mistake. And then the Bhagavatam, in the second canto, it says, when you come to Satvagun, then what it does is those thoughts are there, but they no longer have energy. They have more energy when we're in passion, but still we don't have to act on them. In Satvagun, it's just like they're there, but it's like it's raining outside, but we're dry in here. It's not affecting you. So if your determination to be Krishna conscious is strong, when those desires come up, you just say, yeah, that's conditioning. That's programming. I don't have to act on it. And then you think, how do I want to see the situation? Okay, let's say you're seeing the situation in one way. I could do this, and this would really be good, and I'd really enjoy this stuff. How do I want to see it? You turn it around and say, I would like to see it this way. You have that choice. Right? What's the Krishna conscious way to see the situation? Right? Otherwise, by our conditioning, we'll be drawn into so many activities, and we'll feel helpless and go, well, this is the way I grew up. Is that the way you want to stay if that doesn't work for you? Of course not. So why not focus on what you want to be and change, and you know, work on changing it? Yes, Mathura has a question or a point or both.
Okay. It's a point. One thing Srila Prabhupada said is that when we're always meditating on how to spread Krishna consciousness, this is how we can control our minds. Yeah. I'm also thinking and having some experience, very little, but I'm meditating on how to follow Srila Prabhupada's instructions and his vani, just constantly on his vani. The anarthas become burned up because one who follows the instructions of the spiritual master, they are empowered to
very
do what he
point.
Wants.
And I think this relates to Tulsi Rani's question. Sometimes devotees say, my mind, and I feel like this. Now, I don't want to be unsympathetic to how you feel. But in light of what he's saying is when you go out and execute the instruction, what becomes more important now? How you feel or the world? The world becomes more important. There's people we can help. And when you're in the mood of helping people, how you feel, I don't really feel like I want to do this or this. You're not so, that's not so much guiding you anymore, but you're more guided by what other people, how you can help other people. Really interesting thing, I have to say. It's very interesting. I had some discussions with Borijan Prabhu about humility. You know, you ever feel like really fallen and really depressed because you're so fallen? And really whatever else goes along with feeling really fallen and I'm just this, I'm just that. What are you meditating on at that moment? Yourself. When Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, I'm really fallen, I'm really this, I'm really that, I'm really that, this, what is he meditating? Who is he meditating on? Krishna. Huge difference. One's the mode of ignorance and one's transcendental. So if we become too self-absorbed in how we feel, it can bring on the mode of ignorance and it can handicap us. Bhaktivedanta Purnaswami gave a nice example. I love this example. We were asking about guilt. I said, well, what about guilt? You know what I mean? Like, if you keep doing the wrong thing, you know, how do you overcome guilt? It would be wrong to not be guilty. He said, it's just like you fall into a puddle of mud, and you're laying in the puddle of mud, and you don't get up, and you're just laying there and going, I'm so muddy. I'm so stupid, I slipped in the mud. And look at my clothes, they're full of mud. I am so unfortunate. And you're just laying there, everybody's like, yeah? So you're going to get up? This mud smells also. And it's just horrible, you know? So he said in the Manu Samhita, it says, a Brahman never berates himself. He never beats himself. A Brahman does not beat himself up. In Shastra it says, Shudra is one who laments. Shudra, I'm so muddy, I'm so bad, what's the use? Why didn't you get up, you know? It's just like, just sit on the couch and vegetate. It's like, the world's so bad, you know? So he's a Brahman, he said, I fell in the mud. That was dumb. I should watch where I'm going. My clothes are muddy. Yeah, well, let's go take a bath and wash them. That's a Brahman. And let's put on some clean clothes and what? And keep walking. So forth, I'm so bad, I'm so this, you know. It's like, then it's all about you. The world's not all about you. That's where we get trapped. So Brahmins, sattva-guna. It's okay, we made a mistake. Yeah, it was wrong, you know. I understand, I'm remorseful, I feel bad. Okay, well, how do we correct it? Anytime you were with Prabhupada and you made a mistake, Prabhupada would say, so, what are you going to do? That was all he was concerned about, you know. Today is the first day of the rest of your life. That was Prabhupada's mood. Okay, you messed up. What are you going to do now? It was like the past didn't matter. So what are you going to do now? Let's move forward. That was Prabhupada. He didn't dwell on the past. Okay, you know, sannyasi just fell down, ran off with the Brahmacharini, took all the money. Okay, today's the first day of the rest of your life. What are you going to do now? Come back and engage in service. It was like, okay, erase the past. Doesn't matter. That was Prabhupada. Anyone who knows Prabhupada knows that's what he was like. Because he wasn't dwelling in ignorance. That's the motivation. Oh, I'm so bad. How can I do that? My mother told me I was an idiot, and I know I'm an idiot. And my temple commander told me I was an idiot. And I was just like, what's the use? And blah, blah, blah. You know, what's the point? You know, you want to stay there the rest of your life? No, of course not. You want to move forward to achieve what you want in your Krishna consciousness. And that's how you do it. I was an idiot yesterday, but today there's hope. Yes.
I was thinking, in the West here, a lot of us are conditioned. Myself, I know, I've been struggling with this, is to act independently. We live independently. We live independent of each other, all in our lone little houses, no community. I mean, this community, it's spread out all over the place. It's a microcosm of what is going on in our consciousness. So when we see, I need help, I need to take shelter of the Shaktivesha avatar, I need to take shelter of the pure devotee, then there's special grace.
Yeah.
Without that, it's like just analyzing how I can change my mind, how there's, forget about it. I've tried it for 10 years and it doesn't work. I'm done.
Well, one thing that I can say definitely from working with devotees is we have a huge advantage because we can do that. We can take shelter of Guru and Krishna, Prabhupada. And one devotee, interesting, one devotee came to Bhaktivedanta Purna Swami and said, I can't forgive this devotee, what should I do? And he said, forgive because it pleases Krishna. Mm. So you can go through a whole, you know, psychotherapy of how to forgive, but we have this advantage to say, yeah, if I forgive this devotee, I'll get closer to Krishna, and I want to get closer to Krishna. And getting closer to Krishna is more important than punishing him. And we have that advantage that we can operate on that level also. Mm. You know, we have so many... We have the spiritual undercurrent that can help us with so many of our problems. And I heard an amazing thing. This was a counselor who teaches counseling at a theological college. He trains counselors. And he said the greatest counseling, the most effective counseling, is a supportive spiritual community. So we were in this forgiveness workshop. And people were coming up and said, I've done so many wrong things in my life. I offended so many devotees, this and that. Please forgive me. They were just confessing their whole life. It was amazing. But I was watching this and I was saying, this is the power of a supportive community, that you can do that. And they would walk away just feeling relieved that they could say that to the devotees. That I, you know, as a rascal, I did so many horrible things, unmentionable things in my life that I want to improve. I want to be a good devotee. I want your blessings. Please forgive me. Just that we have a community that we can go in front of and say these things. Wow. And people who will listen and people will support us. That's really important. So we're at a big advantage. Definitely. Yeah. I was listening to a lecture today about sexual purity. And the man said, you know, like you have this habitual part of your brain and just by committing... It's not enough because that part of your brain doesn't care if you commit. But that's true, but also in Krishna consciousness, we're committing to God. So we have a little, there's something greater that we're committing to. So we have a little more, we get a little more mileage out of our commitment. You know, there's a greater reason to do this. So I started at 6:20 and now it's an hour later. And I started at 5:20, so... I mean, if anybody wants to talk about this later, they can come up. I mean, if you want to continue to talk, you can stay here and we can talk about it here, you know, up front. But I just want to officially end out of respect to all the hungry devotees. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Go Premanandi. Hari Hari Bol.